Well, John Wesley, the founder of Methodism, spoke often of a rigorous faith that united one's head, one's heart, and hands together in Christ. Now, another way to put this is a faith that includes reason, a faith that is heartfelt and spiritual, and a faith that is hands-on and shown outwardly through the stewardship of our time, our talents, and our tithe. And now, this morning, being Consecration Sunday, I would like to focus on Wesley's rigorous faith of the head, the heart, and the hands. And more specifically, I would like to talk together with you about the stewardship of our money. Now, many of you about now are probably saying, "Oh, brother, here it comes," and beginning to shut your hearing off, or hearing aids as it may be. But as I said last week, most people in my generation and younger think that this is all the church talks about. And again, if you worship here often, you know that this church very rarely speaks of money during worship. But this is a special Sunday. It's Consecration Sunday as we look to 2009 and what we will give to God through this church for helping our ministries in 2009. So please don't shut me out this morning. Allow our conversation to be heard. And if you're visiting with us, just know that we are not stuck on receiving money. And, you know, we are talking about our responsibilities, our stewardship responsibilities for our lives. And really, money is only one of them. All right? Now, I've come to believe after studying this for some time that there are a couple of reasons why negative feelings tend to prevail when churches talk about money. Number one is that many evangelists over the years, televangelists in particular, have capitalized on pulling our heartstrings and then abusing us with their lavish lifestyles. And that has caused all of us, including this preacher, to question, I don't give any money to them, quite honestly. But what that does is then real pastors have shied away from educating their congregations about how churches use the money that is given. All right? Now, you know, it's interesting when thinking about this. When I talk to folks that are my generation and younger, I say, "Well, you shop at Walmart, don't you?" "Well, yeah." "Well, you shop at Penny's or Kohl's or wherever you buy your clothes, don't you?" "Well, yeah." "Well, you realize they only want your money. That's all they want." And I say, "Do you understand why the church wants your money?" "Well, to build big buildings and pay this and pay that." "No, we want your money to support the ministries so that we can feed people. To support the ministry so that the VIM can go down to New Orleans and rebuild homes. To support the ministries so that we have a wonderful administrative assistant that hands out money for our benevolence fund to people who don't have electricity for heat or cooling. Or maybe can't buy the next meal for their family. Or whatever their situation may be. That is why churches ask for money, at least true, honest churches, which 99.9% of them are in the United States. We're not just wanting money. We're wanting the money so that we can save lives and introduce Jesus Christ, the healer of our souls, to them. So this morning, I want us to try to wipe away all of our preconceived notions so we can at least have a common place to begin our conversation together. And I found, honestly, that we're in good company talking about money. Jesus talked a lot about money. 16 of Jesus' 38 parables are concerned with how to handle money and possessions. In the Gospels, an amazing 1 out of 10 verses, or 288 in all, deals directly with the subject of money. I was thinking you might respond to that, you know. The Bible offers 500 verses on prayer, less than 500 verses on faith, but more than 2,000 verses on money and possessions.